about choosing sides, but really we could say change is in the air. This is something that we all feel. If you feel a little anxious about it, you're not alone. Not just because of the election, but because of how our economy is shifting and changing and evolving. The smartest pollsters in the country couldn't predict what happened on Tuesday night / Wednesday morning. We had so many minds trying to read what was going on and make predictions and predict the future, and they couldn't do it. So why do we put so much pressure on ourselves to know what the future needs to hold and what our next five moves should be? We add a lot of stress and pressure to ourselves because we're expecting to be able to read the future and plan and predict the future. And what this election showed is that's not the world we live in anymore. Even for something as massive as who our next president will be, the days of predicting are behind us. And again, you probably feel some sense of that, which is why you're here in this room. I remember waking up on Wednesday morning. I had two speaking engagements to give on Wednesday and then another on Thursday. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, this is the worst possible day to have a speaking engagement. Like, what can I say? What am I going to say? And I don't want to choose sides. You know, half of our country is feeling great relief, and the other half is going through tremendous grief. And as I reflected on this idea that, you know, the mantra I adopted for the book, and we'll get into it, is if change is the only constant, then let's get better at it. And so actually, because we're at this really epic pivot point for our country, I want to honor that and give us all just a minute or two to connect. It's such a unique time. And so before we get into today's presentation, I would love for you to share. I don't know about you. I live in New York. I noticed that people were more open after this election. That in the last week, everybody's going through such a range of emotions. But what it creates, and any of you who know Brené Brown's work, is a sense of, for some, vulnerability, change in general, opens us up. And when we release our grip on having to know everything, we become more open, more receptive. I would love for you to turn to the person next to you, introduce yourself. So much of these conferences about who you meet. I'm actually secretly an introvert, even though I'm the one up here on this stage in front of all of you. And I give myself permission that if I come to a conference and I meet one person that I connect with, it's been a success. So maybe that will happen for you today in this room. Turn to the person next to you and just share. I'll give you 1 minute each. What was your reaction to this last week? How have you been feeling? And what's the opportunity, either for you, for the communities you serve, or for the country at large? Okay, 1 minute each, go. I'll tell you when to switch. Okay, go ahead and wrap up. Wrap up, and let's come back together. Awesome. Sounds like some great conversations were happening, certainly more that can be continued after you leave this room. Thank you all for being willing to be open and share with each other and listen. I'll tell a little bit about my story before we get into the meat of today's presentation. You know, I think whenever I'm attending a conference, it's easy to be in the audience and look up at the stage and think that the person standing up here has something I don't. And that's not really the case. So often, those of us who are authors and researchers in any capacity, or experts, which is such a funny term, it's because it's something that we struggle with. And that's certainly true for me. So while I have done a ton of research and interviews on pivot, and I developed a 4-stage pivot method that I'm going to share with you today, the truth is I started studying this subject because I didn't feel very resilient to change. I felt like I was in a little raft in the ocean, and everyone else around me was in a cruise liner. And while I was getting rocked around by every wave, just a hot mess, up, down, and sideways, everyone else seemed to be just cruising along in this cruise liner. And what was wrong with me? I remember feeling like I was having a midlife or quarter-life crisis, a term we coined in 2007, every 2 years. When I was at UCLA, I took a leave of absence my junior year to work at a startup company in Silicon Valley. I was the first employee. I was the webmaster, office manager, marketing assistant. And 2 years in there, I did go back to finish my degree. I hit a plateau, or pivot point, as I call it. The career conversation that I regret the most is the one I never had. I didn't have the courage to tell the founder that I had hit a ceiling there, and I couldn't see my growth continuing. So while I could have been troubleshooting the job that I had, I actually started taking job interviews for Google in my car on lunch breaks. Yeah, some of you know what that's like. And I interviewed at Google for 4 months, all while I could have been troubleshooting the job I had. And eventually I got the job. This is now started at Google in early 2006. I'd been managing our Google AdWords accounts at the startup, and I pivoted to becoming an AdWords product trainer at Google. I actually knew that I wanted to be an author and speaker someday, and I also knew that I got red hives all over my neck and chest when I would speak in front of other people. So anyone in the front row can confirm, I don't think I have hives today, but it's possible. And I even had a manager at Google give me feedback. Jenny, did you know that your chest turns red? When we had a meeting with very important managers and directors, and he said, your whole chest turned red. I would recommend, you know, figuring that out somehow. And I thought, I'm Irish, like not full Irish, but I'm like see-through, white colored, okay? Like what am I gonna do? Let me tell you, this is a tangent off pivot, but I wore turtlenecks for the next 4 years, every time I got up in front of a room. And it wasn't until I read this book called Confessions of a Public Speaker. And I'm sharing this with you because I know that you all have to go into important meetings, or you teach yoga, or you speak at a community event. Like, we all have to do this. So this book said, when you are an animal standing alone on an open plain, with no weapons, except a clicker, and nowhere to hide, and hundreds of eyeballs staring at you, evolutionarily speaking, you're about to die. Aha! So even now I can feel like, okay, so there's adrenaline. Our body sends extra adrenaline. So whether that's red bumps, or a restless shaky leg, or shaky hands, or a shaky voice, or a pounding heart, we just gotta give that adrenaline something to do. So there's your pro tip for the day that has nothing to do with pivoting. But suffice it to say that that job on the training team really served me well. I was at Google from 6,000 employees as it grew to 36,000. I trained over 1,000 people in my first year. And although I was talking about the AdWords product, what ended up happening was people would come whisper to me because I was kind of their mama duckling. I was their person for the first week in the company. And they would come whisper to me a year or 2 years in and say, Jenny, I'm bored. I don't know what to do. These are the best and the brightest. They'd come from all the best universities. And they would come in at Google and answer, we called it 866 calls, so customer support. And they would inevitably hit these pivot points or plateaus 1 or 2 years in. I had hit one myself. I knew that I loved working with people, but I didn't want to talk about the AdWords product for the rest of my life. So on nights and weekends, I started going to coach training. And that was extremely rewarding for me. I felt like, you know, I don't want to talk about AdWords. I want to talk about people's hopes and dreams and what is most important to them and help them pursue that. And so I got this idea drop-in coaching to be as available to any Googler as a massage. Massage was one of the big perks that was touted at the time. So I joined a 10% team. We started working on this program. And later, when a career development team opened up at Google, I was perfectly positioned to move on to it because I had done coach training, because I had done this 10% project. I ended up creating a global drop-in coaching program, training managers and directors all over the world. I started managing authors at Google, which is a dream. I'm a total bookworm. Authors are my superheroes. Everything's perfect, right? But still, I felt like something was missing. So 2 years into my time at Google, I'd become a manager. I was asked to not fire, but essentially tell some of my former good friends on the team who are now my direct reports, they had to go find another job within the company or leave. That crushed me. I thought I needed to leave the company. I ended up pivoting to the career development team. And then 2 years in, my first book was coming out. So I asked to take a 3-month unpaid leave. This is at the start of 2011. And I felt I was hitting burnout. I don't know if any of you can relate, but I was in just cycles of burnout, crash, recover, burnout, crash, recover. It's like my body was not thrilled, but I didn't know how to get off of that cycle. And at the time I was at Google, I actually worked under Sheryl Sandberg's part of the organization, not reporting to her, but under her, and we all looked up to her so much. But I remember thinking, I don't actually want that job. It was the first time that I realized I don't have to just climb this corporate ladder all the way up to middle management and the middle management and then the top. That wasn't how I would feel most fulfilled. So when I started this sabbatical, I agonized every single day for 3 months what I should do. I didn't take the sabbatical thinking, yeah, this is my exit plan, I'm out of here. I didn't know what to do. But as the sabbatical started ending and I realized it's really now or never to give my own business, my own ideas a shot. I cannot do both anymore. And I wasn't making any money yet from my side hustle, this blog and book that I had started in 2005 called Life After College. So I made the really tough decision not to go back to Google. And I joked that at the time it was like breaking up with Brad Pitt. You know, you really think you can do better than Google? Six figures, salary, 3 meals a day, yoga. I had a bike path connecting, literally connecting my front door to my office building where I lived in Mountain View. And people thought I was nuts. To this day, my mom still does not agree with my decision to leave Google when I did. I was working on the book for Pivot, and I said, Mom, so, you know, now that you've seen, like, I'm almost 6 years out, now that you've seen where I am now, do you see why? She said, no, I still disagree. Okay, so sometimes our family, like, we'll never fully win them over. They just want us to be safe and secure. But what do we want for ourselves? Yes, safety and security are important. Yes, career changes can often seem to threaten our most fundamental needs on Maslow's hierarchy, food, clothing, shelter, our very ability to provide for ourselves. So of course we're scared. But we don't optimize for feeling safe, certainly not those of you who have come to a conference like this. We want to grow and learn and make a difference and make an impact and leave a legacy, to live a legacy. So you think that's the end of my story. Okay, I thought it was the end of my story. I thought, aha, okay, I've had these crises every few years. I'm good now, right? I was 27 when I left Google, and then sure enough, 29, slam, once again. Knocked on my ass. I had become the girl who left Google and the girl who left college on every podcast, every interview, the girl who left things. And I was starting to get burnt out on that. And I felt like, I don't know what's next, but it wasn't exciting to me to talk about life after college for the rest of my career. I knew I was ready for something different, something bigger, something I could really help people with moving forward. And so this time, and I don't know if any of you have had, I call 2013 the apocalypse year. Has anyone had one of those? Like a breakup, fights with the people closest to you, money's going down to zero. I don't know if you have, I certainly did. I couldn't seem to get anything right. I think I cried almost every single day. I was doing yoga, I was journaling, I was making gratitude lists, I was doing all the things, meditating. None of it worked, none of it worked. I mean, it worked sort of cumulatively in the long term, but it wasn't fixing this problem of what's next. And this time, as my bank account started to dwindle all the way down to zero, I felt choked by fear, because this time I didn't have a steady paycheck to fund the exploration of what's next. This time was different. I remember in order to stay in New York, I had to move into a new apartment. So I had to clear out my savings, 3 months security deposit because I'm an entrepreneur. And my rent doubled overnight. My business income did not. So now I was petrified. I remember walking with a friend and asking her, am I delusional? Is the jig up? You know, I never really thought I was cut out for entrepreneurship in the first place. But now maybe my gremlins were right. I just, the jig is up. I really, really debated, should I call my friends at Google and go ask for a job? Something in my gut said, no, it's not time yet. This is an initiation. This is a doorway to an even bigger life and career that's waiting for you on the other side. I mean, at the same token, I started to feel angry. I had read hundreds of personal development, business, fitness, finance. If it's nonfiction, you name it, I've read it. I read all the books. And none of them were getting me out of this pickle. So that's when I decided, and by the way, rent was due in 2 weeks, and I didn't know how I was going to pay it. This is January of 2014, not that long ago. And I had 2 weeks. Now it's on. I have 2 weeks to figure this out. In that moment, this metaphor came to me of a basketball player. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, I saw it, the mistake that I had been making. I was so focused on what I didn't know, what I didn't have, what I didn't want. None of those moved the conversation forward. And instead of acknowledging all of the gifts and skills and experiences and people already present in my life, I was so caught up in the unknowns. And it wasn't until I started to double down on what was working, and I thought of the analogy of a basketball player. When they stop dribbling, one foot is firmly planted, and the other scans for passing options. I had been running around the court like a crazy person. When I grounded, when I had half of me focused on what I already knew, what I had, what I knew that success might look like, my book, my speaking engagements, my community, there were so many things I could start to work from. And it wasn't until I realized I was trying to pivot too sharply. I was looking so far outside of myself for answers, I ignored what was right underneath my feet. And so I started doing very small shifts, like going back to all my former coaching clients. These are people who had already hired me in the past. I already loved working with them. And I said, I think the pressure to find a mentor is a little off base. I call them friend-tors or one-off mentoring. And in this case, I do what I call 30-30. So I called former coaching clients. They said, do you want to do a 30-30? We'll brainstorm 30 minutes, something you're thinking about, and 30 minutes for something I am working on. And I just asked, what can I create for you? I'm thinking of creating a community. At the time, I called it Brilliance Barter. They gave me feedback. So by the time I launched, they were on board. They helped create this with me. And slowly, I started to crawl my way out of this hole. And it ended up being that by the end of that year, 2014, I had tripled my income, stayed in business, hit six figures for the first time. It worked. It worked. And I've been studying careers for 10 years, so it's not like I was starting from scratch in that arena either. But finally, I realized that there were one of two things happening here. Either I'm destined to keep hitting these crisis points every 2 years, and there's something wrong with me, and I'm never going to be happy. Or two, we're all going to be having to ask and answer this question, what's next, much more frequently than in years past. As I started to do research for the book, the latter proved to be true. And that's where I became fiercely committed to making this easier on all of us. Again, if change is the only constant, we have got to get better at it so that we all don't feel like we're stuck in a little raft in the ocean getting rocked by every wave, and so that we can put that brain power that tends to obsess over figuring out what's next back on the things that matter most. So as I then started mapping this to seeing other people, and in the 3 years since, I've been studying pivot up, down, and sideways. And it's been really fascinating. And I've used the pivot method on projects, on writing the book. If people have asked if you can apply it to dating and relationships, sure can. I'll show you how in a minute. But it's been really exciting to start to have a framework for the change process. And one thing that I want to say, give me a moment to get these slides up and running. Okay. So I kind of hijacked pivot from Silicon Valley. You've probably heard the term pivot. Before, of course I'm trying to hijack this word a little bit, but Silicon Valley uses it that we always hear about startups pivoting. And it's usually plan B. The original strategy has failed, so they pivot to save the business. Twitter used to be a podcasting service. YouTube was a video dating site. When it comes to our careers now, more so than ever, pivot is plan A. This is the new normal. If you are I'm curious. I know I haven't really described all the lingo yet, but raise your hand if you feel like you're at a pivot point, like change is on the horizon. Okay, so many, at least 50%. Raise your hand if you just came out of a career pivot, like you just made a big move and are on the other side of it. Okay, cool. And raise your hand if you just feel kind of neutral in the middle. And raise your hand if you have a side hustle or some creative project going that you'd like to get some momentum on. Awesome. Okay, cool. So the big secret is that we are pivoting more often than not. And when we get better at the pivot process, the pivot points are less jarring. They don't have to be a crisis. When it comes to our careers, to pivot, to change, to evolve is the new normal. It's plan A now. And that's good news. As much as there's heightened anxiety, there's so much opportunity if we can see it this way, if we can stop taking our pivots personally. I wish I hadn't wasted so much time thinking, what's wrong with me? Am I delusional? It was kind of a waste of time. I understand I needed to do that, but really, it's nothing personal. If you're at a pivot point, it's a good sign. In fact, what I noticed when I was writing the book, that there's a certain group of people we call high net worth. They've accumulated a lot of financial resources in their lifetime. But for the people who I wrote Pivot for, and I really would imagine are in this room, I call them high net growth. Money is important, absolutely, but it is not everything. High net growth individuals, when given the chance, will often take a pay cut, make a lateral move, bootstrap a business to ensure that they are learning and growing. And again, the fact that you took an entire day out of your life to come here, high net growth. Welcome. And to come to a session like this and to focus on your own learning and growth and development. And when those needs for growth are being met, we often turn toward impact. Great, so that's wonderful that I'm learning and growing, but now I really want to turn it outward. I really want to serve others. How can I make an impact on my family, on my community, on society, on the world? I call them impactors for short. So for impactors, we can expect to be pivoting every few years, and it's not just entitled millennials. I really wondered while I was at Google and contemplating leaving, like, oh no, I'm one of those people the media keeps talking about. I'm the entitled millennial that's never gonna be happy. I'm at the Disneyland of companies. What the F is wrong with me? You know, if you work at Google, you should be nothing but 100% grateful and 100% of the time, just 100% fulfilled even, 100% grateful 100% of the time. Hashtag blessed, you know? But I couldn't help it. I just wasn't. I don't mean that to diminish my time there. I loved Google. It's the best 5-year MBA I could ask for. But there was more out there for me. At the time, I could impact 30,000 people, and I made this calculation. And if I left to go do my own thing, there was a possibility of impacting so many more. Typically, when we think about our growth, especially career growth, we think it's going to be linear, like a career ladder. I don't even have to say to all of you, the ladder is out. That's so obvious. Like, you already know that viscerally. But what happens is we hit a pivot point, and we start to plateau. The plateau is a general feeling of, work's fine. I'm fine. Yeah, it's good. And if we don't listen to the plateau, we start to decline. You know, not as a person, no judgment, but physically even. Our bodies start to react. We might get headaches more often, sick more often. I had a friend who would get panic attacks on her way out of the subway, on her way into work. At that moment, our choice is to pivot. And to pivot involves some degree of risk and uncertainty, but it's how we keep growing. And the reality is that the linear path just isn't available to us in the same way that it used to be. I often tell people, I love metaphors, so I tell people, think of your career like a smartphone, not a ladder. It's up to you to download apps for different skills, interests, and experiences that you want and need to feel fulfilled. So not all pivots have to be sharp. If you look at this like degree, some pivots are baby pivots, other pivots are major ones, but they all have something in common. Pivots stretch us outside of our comfort zone. So this is something I call the riskometer, that if you don't make a change, you kind of end up in the stagnation zone. If you're playing it safe, that's the comfort zone, and that's fine. Sometimes we need to just be comfortable for a minute, you know, and appreciate what we've got and focus even on other areas of our life. The optimal range for change is your stretch zone, where you feel edgy, excited. Yes, you're challenged, but it's manageable. And if you try and pivot too sharply, it will send you into your panic zone. So there was this wave sweeping the blogosphere and businessosphere about 5 years ago. Quit your job, outsource everything, work from a beach in Thailand. Screw the man. And if I stood up here, and I don't know all of your situation, but if I told all of you, like, screw the man, quit your job tomorrow, it would probably send you into your panic zone. And by the way, I don't believe that. I actually think things are so fluid now. We're working for ourselves, we're contractors, we're freelancers, we're project-based economy, gig economy. People are coming in and out of companies. I really welcome it all. When I have clients who are at big corporations come to me and they want to pivot, the first thing I ask them is, how can you pivot within your company? I've seen so many people create amazing roles for themselves. So I'm just, so that we get that out up front, I'm not the person here to say, oh yeah, everybody should quit what you're doing. And no, it's how can you pivot in a way that honors your stretch zone, whatever that may be for you. I define a pivot as a methodical shift in a new related direction based on a foundation of what is already working. Your existing strengths. None of you in this room are starting from scratch. That is so important to recognize. When I've seen pivots be successful, it's because people honor where they're at and what you've already accumulated up till this point. Even things you enjoyed doing as a kid come into play. Okay, so now just a little moment to break again with each other. Let me explain this first. One thing that's really exciting is to look at your career trajectory and know that you've probably already done this. I'm actually not telling you something you don't already know. I'm just today giving you language for it. So I would love for you to reverse engineer your last pivot and try and identify, I pivoted from A to B by leveraging C, meaning I pivoted from coaching and career development at Google to coaching and career development, but self-employed. So you can see how I had that common thread. It's almost like a pole vaulter. They use a pole to catapult them over the high bar. What is the pole? What is the thing that your last pivot and this one had in common? How did A get you to B? And try and identify the strength or connecting factor in between that made it so it wasn't a 180. If I had quit Google to become a yoga teacher full-time, that would have been more of a 180. So we'll take 1 minute each. I'll tell you when to switch and turn to someone different this time than the person you did the last time. Go. Okay, time. If you can hear me, clap your hands once. You can hear me clap twice. You can hear me clap three times. You can hear me clap four times. You're welcome. You're welcome. Okay, no kidding. Awesome. It's really fun. I like this conference as a conference prompt quite a bit. Not just what do you do, but how'd you get into that? What were you doing previously? In the speaker's lounge, I spoke to a woman who is the highest ranking African-American woman in the Air Force. She was there for 35 years. Pivoted internally so many times and is now running a leadership institute. Really fascinating to understand how people got to what they're doing now. And if you want an alternative to what do you do, I also like what are you most excited about. So, two side notes. Let's get into the pivot method, and this is where it becomes all about you. You are the expert on your life. Just by taking this time is so valuable. And I encourage you, we're gonna give about 1 minute for each prompt today. I often spend a month or more on some of these things with coaching clients. So this is just the framework, and then you can do so much more with it as you go throughout the day and be listening throughout the day for clues. They often pop up out of nowhere. So if you have a pen and paper, go ahead and get one out. The first stage is plant. So again, with that basketball analogy, the first thing we do is plant. Especially go-getters, especially high net growth individuals, often when we hit a pivot point, the first thing we say is, okay, I'm ready for change, what's out there? And we already start looking beyond ourselves. It's so important to plant first. What are your existing values, strengths, experiences, and one-year vision? In the book, I call this put a pin in it. Like Google Maps. You don't have to know exactly where you want to end up. If you did, you'd probably be doing it. But approximately, what does success look like a year from now? I believe any farther is far too hard to predict. I think the where do you see yourself in 5 years question is completely irrelevant if our election has taught us nothing else. So 1 year, that's it. That's all you have to know. 1 year from now, what does success look like? And now we have the brackets for your pivot. Now you are rooted. And let me tell you, a lot of people want to skip this plant stage for two reasons. One, it seems too self-helpy. Like, meh, I've done that before. Two, it's scary. Because the minute we start to say what really excites us, all the gremlins come in. Who do you think you are? You're not smart enough, capable enough, old enough, young enough. You can't do that. So just welcome them. I'm not the person that ever says, like, crush your fear, smash it, destroy it. Your fear is just trying to be helpful. It's fine. Welcome it. I am such an advocate for fear and insecurity because those things let me know that I'm on the right track. I'm on to something. So I'm going to give you some time to reflect I don't want you to censor yourself. You can censor yourself later. But right now, I want you to stretch yourself and go big and really let yourself think creatively and expansively. So for 1 minute, and do not lift your pen from the page. When you think you're done, it means you've thought of your most obvious stuff that you already know. So write as much as you possibly can. What are you currently enjoying most? And this can be in your personal or professional life. What is working best? What are your biggest strengths? When do you feel most in the zone? You can even look back on the last week. What do people most often come to you for advice on? What are some things you enjoyed doing as a kid? What is most important to you when you get out of bed every day? Moving on to the next question, 1 year vision. What does success look like 1 year from now? Write as much as you can. How do you want to feel? What does your ideal average day look like? How much do you want to be earning? What types of projects do you want to be working on? What kind of people do you want to be surrounded by? What kind of impact do you want to make 1 year from now? If you were invited to come here and speak at this conference, what would you be speaking about? Moving on to scan. Once you are rooted in the plant stage and grounded, now we can scan for people, skills, and projects that connect to what you just wrote down in the plant stage. That's the key. Connect them to what you already just wrote down. So now take a minute and brainstorm for people. So we'll do people first and then skills. People. Who do you admire? Who is doing what you want to do in your 1 year vision? Who can you talk to? And even if you don't know names, you can even write down the qualities of the type of person that you want to call into your life. Who are some friendors, friends you can connect with? And who are some people who are farther ahead at your 1 year vision than you are that you could even learn from afar, even from books and podcasts? Part two, skills. This can be career related or not. So given where you want to end up a year from now, there's usually a gap. And part of the exciting aspect of change is that we learn and grow. How do you want to learn and grow in the next year? And again, this can be personal or professional. It could be anything from professional development courses for your work all the way to cooking classes or salsa lessons. Anything that would help you feel fulfilled. 1 minute. And think about your stretch zone. You can even go sideways. What is so random and has nothing to do with your work, but that you're insanely curious about, that you would just steal away to go learn about this, no matter what you were able to do with it. I like reverse engineering from my Amazon wish list. What's on there? What are the themes? The podcasts you subscribe to? The books on your bookshelf that you haven't read yet? What are you magnetizing toward? And even, what do you want to become an expert at in the next year? What do you want to become the go-to person for? Stage three, pilot. Pilot is about small experiments that help you test the waters of a new direction. So just as a TV pilot is one test episode meant to show networks whether or not they should pick up the full series, it's really helpful to think in terms of career pilots, to take the pressure off of having the one perfect next move lined up and instead diversifying our career portfolio a little bit. When I joined that 10% project to do drop-in coaching at Google, that was a pilot. Both the project itself and in my career. When I did coach training on nights and weekends, pilot. Even now, I'm in a big pivot point post-book launch. The book came out 2 months ago, and I have a bunch of pilots lined up, and I don't know which one's really gonna take off. I think, to switch metaphors once again, I think of pilots like racehorses at the Kentucky Derby. You line them up, and you really don't know which one's gonna pull ahead, and that's okay. It's part of the process. And this is what takes the pressure off of having to know everything up front. A good pilot will test the three E's. Do I enjoy this new area? Can I become an expert at it? And is there room to expand, either within my market, within the company that you work for, within your business? So if you're self-employed, you could pilot different services for clients, different pricing models, different billing format. When I started the Life After College blog, that was a pilot. I had no clue where it would lead. The key about pilots is just 10%. So again, career pilots, it's really about small chunks to help you evaluate whether this thing is going to gain its own momentum or not. So now, based on everything you've already written, implant, and scan, brainstorm what small experiments could you run in the next month. So actually, we're at a perfect time of year. Think about between now and the end of the year. What small experiments could you run? This could be anything from taking one class, signing up for an introductory session on something. I include things like going to lunch with so-and-so as a small pilot. So be creative, there's no limits here. And if you run out of ideas, keep going back to your plant and scan sections. Based on everything you already wrote, what small experiments could you try? Now think a little bigger. What could you do in the next 6 months? So reconnect to your one-year vision and work backward. What pilots would most move you toward that one-year vision if they were to be successful? You can think about things with low potential downside but high potential upside. There's minimal risk to try it. And if you fail, quote, fail, you always learn something, no biggie. And if it succeeds, fantastic. What might that look like? An example of an asymmetric pilot, writing a book. It's a massive investment of time and energy, but if nobody reads it or a publisher doesn't buy it, no big deal. And if you release the book and it helps get even one new job opportunity, fantastic. I only say book because there's a statistic that says 1 in 3 Americans want to write a book someday, which is kind of cool. And not all of it has to be about becoming a personal brand. Sometimes it's a way to consolidate ideas. But that's an example of there's really nothing lost to invest in something like that. It's very different than, let me take out a second mortgage on my house and go all in on this new business idea that I know nothing about. It's very different. Okay, now based, so let me just say first too, this pivot method is not a linear process, it's a cycle. So you can plant scam pilot over and over and over and be happy for months, if not years. Eventually there comes a launch moment. That's when you, if there is one, for me launching the book, quitting a job, launching a business, moving teams within the company that you're at. Those are the launches where we pull the trigger on the remaining 10%. But through the pivot method, you've reduced risk. And if a pilot doesn't work out, you can usually look back and say, okay, well, what did work? You follow the method again. What did work? What were the strengths here? Scan. Okay, what people and skills might I need next? And so you keep following the pivot process over and over until you reduce this next move from your panic zone into your stretch zone. So the goal is not to make moves from a place of panic. It's actually very hard to do so, especially when money is tight. Things like, I talk about in the book, cash flow cow, bridge income. It is so, sometimes people feel bad if they have to get a job they don't love just to fund this other thing that they want to do. I welcome it. If cash is too constrained, I talk about an income anxiety seesaw. The lower your income drops, the higher your anxiety, and it actually changes our brain and creates tunnel vision. So do what you need to do to incubate your ideas. It's so helpful. In fact, if you have a job and you don't love it 100%, great. It's still funding everything else that you're working on. It's all good. So now we're not going to go too much into launch, but I want you to look down at everything you've written and circle five things that have kind of grabbed you the most. Which ones have a little beacon, like a magnet saying, pick me, pick me. Just go through, go with your gut, don't overthink. Circle five. And then these are my two favorite, well, I have lots of favorite coaching questions, but here are two good ones that you can ask yourself for any project or even once a week if you wanted. What small step can I take in the next week? And what one next step would make the biggest impact? And the great news is we're only at 11 a.m. This is only session one in this conference. So you may have many more ideas throughout the rest of the day. But for now, write down one next step you could take in the next week, one small step. And what is the one next step that would make the biggest impact? We only have 30 seconds each. But I would love for you to say it out loud and just make it a little more real. So please just very quickly turn to the person next to you and share each of your one next step, and you can steal their idea if it's a good one. Go. Okay, let's come back together. I will say that new ideas, new goals are, I kind of think of them like eggshells. They're a little extra fragile in the beginning, but if there's any place that you could share something vulnerable like that, it's at a conference like this one. Again, oftentimes our friends and family want to keep us safe, but I encourage you to say these things out loud today. Say them out loud. Just grow this little eggshell, strengthen the shell every time you do. One of my favorite quotes is from poet David White, and he says, "That which you can plan is too small for you to live." Is this true now more than ever? That which you can plan is too small for you to live. This is coming from a recovering type A perfectionist people pleaser. It has been such a relief. It's not that my business doesn't still go in ups and downs, but I have to say, even launching the book, being at another pivot point, I feel so much more relaxed. Change is not a problem. It's about surrendering, going with the flow of what life brings, taking the pressure off to know everything and instead just knowing the one next move. And then from that new vantage point with that new data, the one next move after that. One motto that I adopted for myself is build first, then your courage will follow. Sometimes we think courage is going to rain from the sky before we can make our move. And when I feel courageous, then I can go do this thing. It doesn't work like that. Courage comes from taking baby steps. And when we take those baby steps, scared as hell, the courage follows. I call them courage cookies from the universe. Like, you take a step and then a courage cookie comes, but the cookie doesn't come first. Like, you meet the perfect person, or the next step on the red carpet unfurls underneath your feet. Serendipity starts to happen, but it doesn't come first. You've got to start taking those small steps. I truly, truly believe that fear and insecurity and uncertainty are the doorways of opportunity. They are an invitation to freedom. I feel, again, it's almost weird to say, but my fear and insecurity has dissipated, but I feel them all the time. Just because you write a book on pivot, on change, doesn't mean these things aren't there, but I've stopped making them a problem. I take it as a sign that I'm a high net growth individual, always wanting to learn and grow and be outside my comfort zone. So doesn't that mean that fear and insecurity comes with it? They're two sides of the same coin. So my hope for all of you is to release taking any of that personally. Celebrate it. Congratulations. Thank you so much for being here. I'm going to answer some questions, but I really thank you so much for coming to the session today. And thank you. I'll just share a few resources, and I'm doing a book signing at 12:30, but there's a whole toolkit of free templates based on things we've talked about. 5-10 templates for every one of the stages we did today. That's at pivotmethod.com/toolkit. And then I have a pivot podcast, if you listen to Cass. There's a team of 6 pivot coaches. If any of you want to do a 2-session jumpstart to kickstart your thinking for the new year, plan your 2017 pivot. The book will be available in the bookstore. And then I'll put this back up, but while I'm answering 1 or 2 questions, if you want to get this ideal day Mad Lib to plan for when you're out, it's really fun. I wrote it as a Mad Lib so you can kind of vision of what your perfect day looks like. You can text this number and it'll get sent to your email. So we have time for probably just 1 or 2 questions, but if anyone wants to jump on the mic, you know, and feel like you're gonna die, I celebrate you. And I would love to answer any questions that you have. Any takers? Oh, yeah. I'll repeat it. Yeah. Yeah. The question is, sometimes I achieve a goal and I don't even celebrate. How do you deal with the hedonic treadmill of always having expectations and desires outside of our grasp? The Buddhists call it samsara, the cycle of attachment and desire and suffering. Celebration is so important. Oprah said, celebrate what you want to see more of. I believe that celebrating helps teach our body that, hey, thank you. So I actually make a big point to celebrate and rest. One of the things that I think we do not give ourselves enough room and time for is the deep amount of intense thinking and physical stamina that change requires of us. So I don't just make time to celebrate, I also make time to rest on the other side of any big accomplishment. And I feel like the celebration does train our body of, like, good job. It's almost like a dog or a horse, like, good job, let's do more of it. Let's celebrate so that you see how rewarding it is. And then I think part of the celebration is also honoring ourselves every day. And it's as cheesy as that sounds to say it out loud. I know it's sometimes annoying to say, like, meditate. It's like, eat your spinach. But it truly has rewired my brain. And when I'm in meditation, that's when I feel the most spacious and grateful. And I think it's so wonderful when we can acknowledge how much we already have, just for all of us to even be in this room and be able to be here. Thank you. Any other questions before we wrap up? Oh, yeah. Go for it.
This is regards to accountability. Do you recommend finding or having an accountability partner, or how to go about doing that?
Yes, accountability. I love accountability. Any friend. I have so many friends where we have regular 30-30 calls, or I have friends where we have an email chain, like, what are you working on today? And here's what I got done today. So don't restrict yourself to just people who you think are higher up than you. Again, waiting for some holy grail mentor. I think it's really awkward to put pressure on ourselves to say to someone, will you be my mentor? It's really awkward. It's like asking someone to marry you before you've had their first date. So instead, I also recommend just one-off mentoring. Just set up phone calls and lunches with a variety of people. And barring that, just your friends alone, you can call each other once a week and say, how did things go? I once gave my dad, I was training for a marathon, I gave him 5 questions to ask me every Sunday. And I would call him. I did all the work, but I would call him and he would just get out the piece of paper and ask me these questions. He didn't have to be an expert at anything in order to do that. I also, this is on the more personal, emotional side, I've been reading a lot of Byron Katie's work recently. She has a coaching process called The Work. I have friends where we'll just email each other our turnaround thoughts. Like, we'll do some of this coaching work and we just email it. Sometimes you just want to be seen. You don't need to always hire a coach, hire this person, hire that person. We have so much wisdom already within us and so many resources already at our disposal for free. So I'm glad, really glad you asked the accountability question, because I think you could set that up with anyone that you want, even your own Google Calendar. Like, reminder, please ask me. I have a Google Calendar reminder 3 times a week that says surrender. And sometimes I get it and I'm in a long line at the grocery store or something. It says surrender. It's like, oh, okay. That's just set it up for myself. Anything else? One more question? All right. Well, happy conferencing, everybody. Thank you again for spending this time with me. I'm really grateful. And I look forward to keeping in touch.